I mean, getting mad at the ruling class for controlling the media is like getting mad at a cat for being an asshole. Like, if you don't want an asshole cat, maybe don't have a cat.
It's Friday, December 8th, 2017. Welcome to Raging Chickens Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker-in-chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On this week's show, Trump is working hard to ignite an all-out war in the Middle East.
It will be a great war, a fantastic war. It'll be the best war.
California wildfires continue to rage with little containment in a dystopian window into our climate future. Irony abounds as climate change denying Robert Murdoch's $30 million home burns to the ground. Sam Cedar, host of the Majority Report, is fired by MSNBC after alt-right troll Mike Cernovich tried to use a tweet, you know, basically to sink Cedar and discredit him. But by Thursday, MSNBC had reversed its course, saying that they had messed up to cave to an alt-right troll and his misinformation. And a special shout-out today to the Majority Report crew for letting us use that sound clip you heard at the top of the show from one of their producers, Jamie Peck. Just don't get a cat. Representative John Conyers and Senator Al Franken resigned following sexual harassment and or assault allegations. Republican Representative Trent Franks resigns following revelations that he tried to get staffers to carry his baby as a surrogate. You can't make this up. House Ethics Probe begins to look into Republican Representative Blake Farenthold. I always want to call him Fartenhold. After it was revealed that he used $84,000 of taxpayer money to settle a sexual harassment suit brought by his former communications director. Meanwhile, the Republican Party throws its full support behind, you know, child-abusing sexual assaulter Roy Moore in Alabama. And not one peep about the assaulter in chief, of course. Koch Brothers' tax strategy memo leaked. Their advice? Avoid getting distracted about the deficit. And net neutrality protests took place around the country yesterday. And get ready for Break the Internet on December 12th ahead of the FCC vote on the 14th. Pennsylvania State Representative, you know him, guys.
Daryl Metcalf.
Yeah, Daryl went off the rails this week. He used a state committee hearing to come out as a heterosexual again and again. We thought that he deserved his very own remix. Yeah, we're going to have a special link for you on that one. We'll play it later on the show. Oh, yeah, and Metcalf warns that the illegal aliens are coming. PA Student Power Network continues to build momentum for their free college campaign with a free college town hall yesterday at the Community College of Philadelphia. Ooh, let me tell you this. Dark money is beginning to do its work in the state. Koch Brothers funded campus reform targets Kutztown University faculty member for encouraging students to attend a tax bill rally. And Freedom Works and Commonwealth Foundation are caught using union busters to support paycheck deception legislation in the state. And Pennsylvania House Republicans attempted, but failed, to strip health care coverage from members of the transgender community. It's been pretty crazy, I guess, when it comes right down to it all in the week. It's nuts. But in the last call today in space news, Voyager, fires its thrusters successfully for the first time in over 37 years. NASA had to wait nearly 19 hours to find out, to get the communications back. It's kind of like a taste of what the post-net neutrality world will be like for the rest of us. And Kevin, that's me. Yep, I deal with my depression from not being able to attend SpaceCom this past week. The more news I read about it, the sadder I get. But they pulled my credentials, so what am I going to do? Free Will Brewing, yep, they released Stay Tuned, a nice Imperial Stout this week. And this Sunday, they are hosting a Beer and Breakfast with Santa event. How fun is that? That and so much more when it comes into beer news for the week. Just want to remind everybody, tune into the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. I'll be there once again giving the weekly resistance report. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune into the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. This week, we want to give a huge shout-out to our newest members. Thank you, Donna. Thank you, Mel. And thank you, Yanira, for joining on, becoming our latest members to help support this work. I mean, your support will help strengthen our work and help pay our writers more. You rock. Right. And if you like what you hear, if you're listening to us right now and you want to support Pull No Punches Progressive Media, well, become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to RagingChickenPress.org and look for the support and membership tab. Or you can just go to Patreon.com/RC Press and click on Become a Member and you're on your way. Not ready to become a member? No problem. You can make a one-time donation by clicking Donate. Want to remind you of our end-of-the-year membership special, too. Chris Robay's book, Breaking the Spell, A History of Anarchist Filmmakers, Videotape Guerrillas, and Digital Ninjas, is our pick to close out 2017. We're adding it to our bookshelf, and you can, too. Now, through the end of the year, we will send you your very own copy of Breaking the Spell if you become a member of Raging Chicken Press at the $10 a month level. We'll send you some great swag, too. But wait, there's more. Now through the end of the month, through the end of 2017, not only will we send you a copy of Chris Robay's book, Breaking the Spell, we will also send you a special Stay Woke t-shirt, official Raging Chicken Press Stay Woke t-shirt that features our circle graphic, our circle logo, and says Stay Woke on the back. So become a member of Raging Chicken Press today. Sean, welcome, man.
Stop touching me.
Stop touching me.
I just had to get that one out there before we got on with the program.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm going to avoid. I had to, when we were kind of looking, planning the show and stuff like that, I had to make sure I was planning not to play that first, right? Precisely because I know if we played that first, that's the rest of the show. I mean, that's all you can do.
Rails from there.
Yeah. So I thought we should definitely get some things. We should do some things ahead of time before we get to the Mad Cow Metcalf that we're going to get to in the second segment. But I don't know. I thought I'd start off today. I mean, this whole stuff this week about Sam Cedar and the Majority Report and MSNBC. I mean, I know you followed this pretty closely.
Yeah, I didn't really know what was happening until he got fired earlier this week. You know, it's the holidays. I've been really busy with work and everything, and just haven't been really able to catch up on the podcast, not really following things. And no, I didn't realize what happened to Sam Cedar until he got fired. And, you know, it was pretty – I still think MSNBC's original decision to fire him is still outweighed by the fact that they brought him back on Thursday, right? I think the original decision to fire him is absolutely atrocious.
Yes.
You know, and basically – for those of you who weren't following it, 9 years ago, Sam Cedar made a tweet, you know, very satirical tweet about allowing if.
Some, well, let's give the context, right? So what was going on at that point is that there was this debate, right, about giving Roman Polanski like an Oscar or an award or to kind of honor his work at the Emmys, something like this. And there was this debate about whether they should let him back in the country because Roman Polanski, right, was basically accused of raping a 13-year-old girl, right? A matter of fact, had pleaded down, right, to a lesser offense, but was still going to have to do some jail time for that. And instead of actually filing the sentence, he fled the country. He's been living in Europe ever since. And so basically that offense was, you know, kind of what kept him out. Now, so the debate was like, well, you know, should we bring him back? And there were liberals, right, not right-wing folk. There were a bunch of these liberal Hollywood people, right, that Cedar at the time was, you know, he had done acting.
He was an actor.
Right, he had been involved with that. Exactly.
This is between Air America and the Majority Report podcast being launched.
Exactly. And so that comes out, right? And he is absolutely disgusted that there's people that would even consider honoring Roman Polanski after what he did. Right. And so, I mean, look, the guy's a satirist. Right. And this is what he wrote. Right. And so he was so pissed off to hear these like these liberal elites saying this stuff. And I am using that specifically. And I know what the connotations of using liberal elite are and things like, but these are these Hollywood folks.
Harvey Weinstein.
Right. All those kind of people. Like, and so Cedar tweets out, quote, "Don't care, re Polanski. But I hope if my daughter is ever raped, it is by an older, truly talented man with a great sense of mise-en-scene," right? And that was the tweet, right? And there was a series of other tweets around it, right, that was making it that much more clear how pissed off he was at the people. And that was meant to be, like, satirical. Now, you could take that as, you know, whether or not he should even, you know, use that as part of a joke or not like this. Like, I didn't even see this as a joke to begin with. Saw this as kind of like a piece of satire. But even you're saying that he should never do that. What happened was Mike Cernovich, who is
Cernovich,
right? Who's this?
Someone who actually defends rape.
Right, exactly.
It's someone who's actually a rape defender, men's rights activist, alt-right troll, neo-Nazi, blah, blah, blah. Just, you know, name, check off the list. Like, just keep on going down the list and hitting the checks. Like, this is, he's, and he has press pass. I think he has a White House press pass, too.
That's incredible. Yeah, so the story is he basically, that Cernovich guy, right, kind of rape defender Cernovich, right, goes and basically launches a kind of like personal campaign to try to tank Cedar's career, right? Cedar was a contributor, a paid contributor at MSNBC, targeted MSNBC, targeted all of the Majority Report's advertisers as a way to try to kind of get them, discredit him by taking that tweet out of context and basically saying this is what he actually meant. Right. And try to do it. Now, again, whether or not you agree with, you know, that sentiment as for use for satire, we'll put that aside for a second. There's no doubt about what the intention was in terms of that. There was no sense of kind of defending Roman Polanski. It was just exactly the opposite.
Right. And so this happens. There's a huge outpour crying from other people within the media, and not just people within the left media. This is people within the right media, you know, the conservative media, and your centrist media, and people actually like from all spectrums supporting Cedar and going after MSNBC's decision to fire him over a tweet from almost 10 years ago, almost a decade ago. This tweet was shot off.
Yeah, and it's not just that it was almost 10 years ago, right? The issue
was
that
– it was also deleted, right? This tweet was deleted at the time?
No. So okay. He actually – what happened was – and he actually speaks to this, and I'll play his statement in a second just so we can have some more context for it. But what he's after Cernovich kind of tried to attack him, right, Cedar basically – he got pissed off, right? And he deleted it because he just didn't want to deal with it anymore. Right. But then he said he apologizes for deleting it and saying that that was just a move of laziness, right, on his part. And so he actually screen captured the tweet and includes it in his video. Right. He's got a video on a Majority Report. He says he's going to leave it up there forever. So there's no question that he's not distancing himself for it. And he would say, look, he stands by the satire that he did. So let's just take a second. Well, let's just play. It's got a minute and a half or so. But Sam Cedar's response, right, after he was targeted by Mike Cernovich and these right wing trolls he was being fired at that point by MSNBC. This is Sam Cedar.
Hi, my name is Sam Cedar. I'm the host of The Majority Report, and this video and this statement is in response to a concerted effort by members of the alt-right, including former Trump advisor Sebastian Gorka, led by the self-professed predator of women, Mike Cernovich, to smear me, have me fired from places of employment, and drain my radio show and podcast of advertising dollars. This smear involves the willful misinterpretation of a tweet that I posted in 2009. In 2009, there was a disgusting and offensive attempt by some in the film industry to allow for Roman Polanski to return to the U.S. from where he was a fugitive to avoid a trial regarding his alleged rape of a 13-year-old girl. The arguments forwarded at that time consisted largely of time has passed and he's an important filmmaker. I was a former actor, professional satirist, and comedy writer at that time, and I was particularly disgusted that a community I was even tangentially associated with would defend a child rapist based on the fact that he was a good filmmaker. At that time, I wrote and posted a tweet that captured my anger in the best way that I knew how, which was through satire. In it, I wrote the following. Don't care, Ree Polanski. But I hope if my daughter is ever raped, it's by an older, truly talented man with a great sense of mise-en-scene. In the event that anyone of good faith has any question as to whether this tweet expressed outrage at the idea that anyone could defend a grown man who preys on teenage girls. Here are the rest of the tweets I ever wrote about Roman Polanski, including this explicit quote, "And Polanski defenders are offensive, in my humble opinion."
So there's more. It's about another minute and a half of his statement. We have a link to that in the show notes. But there you go. And that's the kind of perspective that Cedar's coming out behind it.
Mm-hmm. And one of the good things that came out, like, or one of the good things about Cedar's response to this is he didn't apologize for the tweet. He didn't apologize for the reference of the tweet, the satire behind it. And no, he went forward. He owned up. He owned it, but also basically, like, you know, he did a bunch of other things going after, you know, he had a BuzzFeed video saying, in today's age, as a media corporation, you can't be neutral. You have two decisions to make. Support your employees, you know, stand up for your employees, or cave to the alt-right.
No, that's absolutely right. And I think that this is why this story is so important.
And this isn't like anti-fascist, Antifa, going after neo-Nazis or going after skinheads or people at their workplace because of them being a repugnant white nationalist, neo-Nazi skinhead who wants to wipe an entire race of people off, you know, off the planet, who want to commit violence. You know, this is a comedian they're going after here.
Well, but even
these neo-Nazi alt-right people trying to use the same tactics.
Right. What they want to do is like what the alt-right wants to do is they want to level it out and make it seem like all this stuff is equal, right? And that is part of what they
do. This is
the
stuff you get from Trump, right? Saying that both sides are equally
responsible. It's exactly the same thing. It's exactly the same thing. And that's, you know, again, that's why we also led with that sound clip from Jamie Peck from the Majority Report, because I think it's exactly this. And it shows you, like, if there had not been the pushback, right, if MSNBC had not had the pushback, they would not have hired Cedar back, right? Like, but now they're basically – MSNBC has kind of come out, and they're basically MSNBC, like, his head, Phil Griffin, basically admits that the network messed up by caving to the alt-right's demands. Look, that's a good thing. However, it shows you the direction that they were planning on going, right?
And imagine a dangerous precedent.
Yes.
That sets for the free media in this country, that you get someone fired because – you fire someone because you don't want to deal with the controversy that the alt-right brings up.
Right. And so it had nothing to do. It had nothing to do at all. Right. They were worried about the controversy, not what was actually at stake. Right. So it wasn't about whether this is true or not at all. They just didn't want the controversy, because anybody who reads that and reads it in context, right, I don't know how you walk away from it unless you're immensely stupid. Right. I don't know how you walk away from that. Right. Actually thinking that he meant those things. So when truth gets thrown out the window like that because they're trying to protect whatever advertising dollars or whatever the hell it is. Right. That's insane.
And, you know, you see like the and then after this, right, you see the red baiting, not the red baiting. You see the double standard, the trolling that the right wing media was playing. You know, I'm not a big fan of Joy Reid. I think she says some things that are off the cuff, blah, 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 blah. But right after MSNBC gets fired, right, the alt-right and the right-wing media then points their guns at Joy Reid, and they try to get Joy Reid fired for making blog posts that, you know, I didn't read the blog post, I didn't dig into this, but, you know, when you searched Sam Cedar on Twitter, the first thing that popped up, you know, in that news article at the top of the screen was Sam Cedar got fired. How come it's not Joy Ann Reid?
Right. Well, and Cernovich or whatever the hell his name is like basically he's come out. He's said after MSNBC decided to fire Sam Cedar, he came out basically saying he felt emboldened and he's ready to move forward and do it again. Right. So the whole idea was like, you know, and he's been doing this kind of thing for a while. Right. But chose a target. And basically this was they're testing a strategy. And that is exactly the kind of thing, right, that we have to push back and push back extraordinarily hard at. Now, the cool thing is like in those 3 days when Cedar was technically fired from MSNBC, right, they launched a I don't know if it was a GoFundMe campaign or something like this. Yeah, and so basically to raise funds, and what they're going to do now, right, which is this is the best possible response you can see. What they're going to do now is they're going to have a documentary. They're putting money towards putting a documentary on Cernovich, right, and basically to show everybody what this guy does. right? And I think that's kind of what we have to do. We have to have that kind of aggressive approach to our media strategy, and we need to do it right from the bottom to the top, right across the board in progressive independent media.
Yeah, no, we need to play in the same thing. You know, Cernovich is in the same tree as the, you know, white nationalist identity Europa people we've been following here on our website, Raging Chicken Press, for the past, you know, year or so. You know, and no, these people need to be known, because if you have like a white nationalist calling up your employer trying to get you fired because you're some sort of like progressive activist or media personality, you know, where does that stop if MSNBC didn't rehire him? You know, MSNBC took a huge step into destroying what was taking a huge chunk out of the free press, our free media, just from firing Sam Cedar. But thankfully, they reversed their decision and rehired him.
Yeah.
You know, and if you click in the show notes, Ryan Grimm from The Intercept has an article. And no, he basically says, like, what MSNBC just did was establish a precedent that we're not going to allow these right-wing trolls, these alt-right trolls, to try and, you know, kneecap someone's career because of a trying to take a tweet or a social media rambling out of – or a social media tweet or whatever out of context to try to get someone fired.
Exactly. And I think this is also the reason why you saw people that came kind of more on kind of on the libertarian end of things and things like this also came to Cedar's defense, even though they didn't necessarily, you know, don't see eye to eye when it comes to politics. But they got to fully recognize kind of what that kind of implication would be if that was allowed to stand. And it should also be said that the one thing that has to be said is that MSNBC would not have reversed its position had it not been from the pressure that was brought to bear on them. Right, by the listeners of the Majority Report of the progressive community. I mean, that's really, really important to remember.
Yeah. And I guess one bit of irony in all of this is the fact that, you know, these people are these, like, assholes that wear these cultural Marxism T-shirts,
right,
you know, out in public and say socialism sucks and stuff like this. But here they are being their quote-unquote cultural Marxist by trying to get someone fired because of politics they don't agree with.
No, and they're overt about this. We've been talking about this on this show now for months, right? If not years, right? Well, we've only been a little over a year from the podcast, but it's like for months and months, we talk and kind of beating this dead horse, so to speak, right? By saying, look, the thing is that this is their plan. This is not just some random thing. This is a goal on their part. They care about power. They don't care about ethics. They don't care about everyone being treated equal. They don't care about fair playing field. They care about power. And that's why we need our own voice to kind of push back upon this. Now, MSNBC has already been making moves for, you know, again, for, you know, even before the election, right, to purge itself of its kind of its liberal leanings, right, to try to give it more balance by bringing in conservative commentators, right, by bringing in kind of right-wing talk radio hosts to kind of balance out people like Rachel Maddow and Chris Hayes and so on. And so there's already been that kind of move to kind of like water down MSNBC as a kind of a voice of having progressive voices. I mean, MSNBC has never been like from beginning to end a progressive station, right? I mean, you've got Morning Joe, for Christ's sake, as the beginning of the day with a kind of Republican host, right? And then you've got, you know, a kind of like kind of center of the road kind of CNN style reporting for a chunk of the day, but it was like in the evenings that you had those liberal hosts, and a lot of them had been fired or purged, right? And we never want to see that happen. And so when you hear us talk about why it is that we're asking people to step forward and kind of become members of Raging Chicken Press, it's for exactly this reason. And Cedar said this, and all the folks in Majority Report said exactly this. The only thing that allowed them to know that they were going to be able to stay in business, right, especially after some of their advertisers started to kind of consider about pulling back, was because they had a strong membership base. Because when you have a strong membership base and your community is the one that's supporting you, right, then you have a cushion against this kind of garbage, right? Because it's not some outside funder that's going to get pulled, but it's your members and your community itself is what's supporting this media. And that is why we have chosen this model, right, to basically build a membership base for Raging Chicken Press, as opposed to looking for some sort of like angel investor that's going to give us the money. Although we'll take that too. I don't know, man. Anything else on that one?
No, but I know one of the things we forgot to mention in the show notes. Perp Walk Friday was last week.
Oh, yeah. Domp, domp. Perp Walk Friday. Yeah, that was good. Did you see the my post on that one?
Yeah, with the beer.
Yeah, Lord the Jesus. Beer and like raise your glass to Perp Walk Friday. Yeah, that was the Mike Flynn, good old Michael Flynn.
And then the tweet heard around the world.
Yep, exactly.
That, oh, I knew about this when it happened.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, stemming from this, one thing, I guess, before we move on, there was a vote for impeachment in the House the other day. 59 Democrats voted for it by voting no to, like, table the resolution completely.
Yep.
59, which I think is actually pretty good. 59 out of, like, 200 people in your caucus. That's, like, a quarter of your caucus is already there.
Yep.
For impeachment. And just got to say, one of the legislators out here in Pennsylvania, Dwight Evans, was the only Pennsylvania Democrat to actually vote for impeachment of Donald Trump this week.
Well, there you go. Kudos right there. No, that's really awesome. And, you know, this is good. You know, people say, well, yeah, why do they do that? They didn't have enough. No, no, no. The thing is about, like, again,
it's a start.
Well, and what the right has been, like, brilliant at doing is that you bring this stuff forward and you have the debates and you have the votes on this so that you begin to establish the discourse, right? You begin to make this a familiar thing, right? For too long, what Democrats will do is sit there, well, until we have the votes, we can't really propose this, as opposed to doing what Sanders has been doing, for example, with Medicare for All and so on, is that you put the stuff out and you begin talking about it. So then it gets into the cycle.
And also, Steny Hoyer and Nancy Pelosi came out against impeachment against Donald Trump. They also came out against impeachment of George W. Bush in 2006 for committing an atrocity and a war crime by invading Iraq with no found basis.
Yep.
You know, these are don't expect any support coming from support of impeachment coming from Pelosi or Steny Hoyer if the Democrats take back the House in 2018. This is going to have to be a bottom up campaign and force it, you know, and keep on forcing this message until they either are with it or they're out of leadership.
Yeah, there you go, man. I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. I mean, that's exactly what we got to do. You know, and, you know, I think all these discussions are so important. You know, you see what, you know, all this has just happened, right? You know, is going on, the votes and people, all this, and the news has just been kind of like crazy. I mean, we saw, for example, just this week, you've got the net neutrality protests, like the Verizon protests that took place on Thursday, right? That stuff is kind of like, you know, is barely breaking through in the kind of mainstream media right now, in part because there's so much going on with the Russia probe and kind of all the news that's breaking on this. Plus now you've got like Trump, you know, basically looking to incite, I don't know how else you talk about it, looking to incite an all-out war in the Middle East with kind of proclaiming, you know, that the United States is now going to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
And did you see Germany's response to that?
No.
German Chancellor, one of the people in Angela Merkel's administration came out and said, we will not recognize United States as a superpower anymore. The America position is not going to be our position, and that Germany needs to start establishing our own position and a Europe position for the rest of the world. So we are not, because the damage that will be done by Trump will pretty much not be fixed once Trump is out of office. And we need to start doing things on our own here and start rectifying our own positions and, you know, break away from the American position on issues.
Yeah, and the irony of, like, here you go, you got a guy who ran on Make America Great Again, and really what he's doing is that he's like, you know, he's
isolating
in the driver's seat.
The
yeah, he's in the driver's seat as headed kind of over the cliff, you know. But, you know, good on Germany for that, because, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. There's got to be a very public break with this administration and with the direction. And frankly, unless you get a more kind of militant kind of Democratic party wing, right, that is not just going to look to play internal politics with things, but is actually going to set out an agenda that's like, you know, calling for, you know, direct action, really. I mean, at this point, against the actions of this administration, then you know what? Then we deserve it. And so, I mean, all the more bottom up resistance we can get. Man, crazy, man, crazy. Have you been following any of this stuff out in California with the fires?
I have. There's a silver lining in it all.
There is.
Yeah. Climate denier Rupert Murdoch has $30 million house burned down to the ground.
There you go.
You know, like sometimes it takes Republicans like having a gay kid or coming out as gay or not liking some sort of like platonic feelings, you know, to come out for this stuff. You know, have to have a personal tragedy happen to them to actually support to reverse their position. maybe this will get Rupert Murdoch thinking that, you know, climate change is real.
Yeah, well, you know what? You know what? And this, but this is also it's true about the right wing folks on this stuff. The conservatives on this is that yes, they have to have the personal experience before they can have any kind of enlightenment. But it rarely extends beyond themselves. So Rupert Murdoch might suddenly kind of put solar panels up on his house, but I guarantee you that Fox News is going to continue to push the climate denial stuff. Right, just like the Republican Party. Just crazy. You know, I look at what I watched. Literally, it was just kind of like, I don't know, horrified, mesmerized by some of the video that was being taken by, you know, kind of just, you know, people who were driving along the kind of 405 or whatever it is there in California. I don't know the roads, but it's and just the hills on both sides of the road just kind of in flames. I mean, it really was. It was kind of like this dystopian kind of like it's like driving through Mordor is kind of what it looked like. I mean, it was horrific. And, you know, and again, you can never say, OK, this one wildfire was a direct result of climate change. Right. I mean, you could have other situations where it is. But this is what the prediction is, that this is going to become more frequent. And the fact that you hadn't rained for a while, for a long while, and then you had the dry conditions and the super heat late in the year, you produce these kind of wildfires, which as of today, I mean, there's still kind of barely any containment of them.
Yeah.
So crazy stuff. So, you know, continue to monitor that. And look, our thoughts goes out to those folks out there. If you have family or kind of, you know, friends out in California, I know I've got several. I'm going to check it in with them to see, to make sure they're all right. A friend of mine from college, Chrissy or Kristen, she posted an image from like they're basically from their yard, and you could see the ridge kind of like off of the distant, not so far distance, just like a ribbon of like burning flames kind of like on the top of the ridge. And she's just at that point, she was deciding what, you know, trying to figure out whether they're going to have to evacuate or not. So it's pretty serious. So, I think it's important. I think we got to look at. I mean, the other big news story this week has been the resignations, right? As a result of the sexual harassment and sexual assault that's been going through the state. I mean, we've got some, you know, on the Democratic side, you've got kind of a couple kind of really key, you know, icons in some ways. I mean, the longest serving member of Congress, John Conyers, right? He's out after multiple allegations of sexual harassment and assault. In his case, there seemed like there had been some, you know, even some payouts or some settlements or discussions. It was kind of even well known in the background.
And there's going to be a good primary. There's going to be a good special election battle with that too.
Yeah, I mean, he's
in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying to tap his. Is it Detroit?
No, it's Chicago.
I thought for some reason I had him in Detroit, but
I think he's in Chicago because I know a couple of my friends on Facebook have been talking. Chuy Gonzalez,
yeah,
who ran against Rahm Emanuel, is positioning himself for that seat. And also Del Rosa from the DSA, the Chicago alderman who's like in his mid-20s, early 30s, is also going to be vying for that seat for Congress. So there's actually a pretty big fight going on within the left where I've seen like messages of people like, hey, I'm a Chuy supporter and I'm a Del Rosa supporter. Let's go, you know, petition together, you know, out like they're petitioning. They're gathering their signatures together, but for both candidates. But it seems like there's going to be there's going to be a left candidate coming out.
Yeah,
of this.
But this is not that though, because Conyers is out of Detroit. I mean,
okay, it might have been someone else then.
Yeah, it's got to be someone else because that's what I thought, he was out of Detroit because he represented parts of Western Detroit and his he was like the Detroit's western suburbs and a large section of like the downriver area of Detroit. Was his district because he basically was trying to basically endorse and tap his son to take over his seat. I know what you're talking about. What seat is that?
I know there is a seat. Was it Rahm Emanuel's old seat?
I don't know.
But there is a seat out in Chicago. Now we're going to have to spend time and look for that.
Yeah. Now we're going to have to check that down because
there's going to be a good primary battle happening out in Chicago. With a longtime Democrat who is stepping down after like 20 or 30 years in office or like a really long time in office. And, you know, there's going to be a nice battle between a couple of really good left candidates with Gonzalez, Chuy Gonzalez, and then Del Rosa, who was blackballed from the Illinois Democratic Party, running for lieutenant governor, because of his issues on boycott, divestment, and sanction campaign against Israel, and because of his support of Palestine.
Yeah, this is going to be one to watch. So we'll come back. We'll come back and we'll dig into that a little bit next week after we kind of sort out. But yeah, I mean, that's going to be, because I saw some of that and it's kind of on the edge of the, and that looks like it's going to be really, really fascinating. And it's also one of these kind of, you know, fights for the kind of progressive soul, right? What's left of it, of the Democratic Party. So we'll see who goes there. But so then you got that. So you got Conyers goes out. That kind of opens that hole. Then, but then you also have got, you know, I mean, the big news for progressives was Al Franken. You know, I mean, Al Franken out of the Senate, he finally basically says he's got to step down. And I think that, you know, I don't really see how there was any other way out of it. I mean, I watched his speech as he was kind of resigning on the Senate floor, basically saying, you know, it became clear to him that he could not, go through the ethics probe and represent Minnesota in the way that he wanted to. He's been getting some flack because he didn't kind of apologize to all these women that that have come forward with allegations. He basically has said that he remembers things differently, and some of them were not true. But ultimately, we're not going to know exactly how that stuff shakes out in terms of an ethics probe to see what's going on there. But he had to step down, and like you know, I don't think there's any other option at this point.
Yeah. No, there isn't. You know, one of the things that this week, you know, this is a story that's not going to go away, the sexual right. abuse stuff, sexual harassment. There's been moves here locally within the Capitol. Governor Wolf has put an op-ed out this week in Penn Live, basically stating that we need to do a better job within state government from protecting lobbyists, staffers, and other women who walk through our hallways at the Capitol, and establish a reporting mechanism to report sexual abuse, sexual harassment. There's a bunch of stuff out there being worked on right now that deals with looking into how much money these caucuses within Pennsylvania are dumping into lawsuits. There's a lot of work. The story's not going to go away. There's a lot of work being done right now.
No, absolutely. And I think that, you know, and I think that like, this has got to happen. This is happening in that state houses around the country, too, as well. You know, you've talked about this, too, as well. You know, when you were talking to kind of women journalists in the Capitol and folks up there about, you know, what it's like to actually work in the Capitol and how you're treated as a woman very often, both amongst staffers.
And, you know, I had a conversation this week with someone who it really pissed me off. You know, their defense of this, male lobbyists. You know, it just set me like off. Defense of this male lobbyist basically said, you know, most people, they meet their spouses in the workplace. You know, it's trying to defend like some of these sexual harassment allegations coming out. And you know what? Maybe like someone took a compliment the wrong way. You know, a female took a compliment the wrong way. You know, if I get complimented by a female, I would certainly, you know, enjoy that. And I had to stop talking and walk away.
Yeah.
Before I just went into like a tirade. Like, yes, I work with people. I don't touch anyone. Like, you know what I mean? It's just you don't touch. There's sometimes like, you know, I've been touched by other employees and you don't feel comfortable about it. You know, we'll definitely talk about this more in the second half with Metcalf. Yeah. And you just say something. You don't flip out. You just say, hey, doesn't feel comfortable.
Right.
You know, even if you're walking by, I don't like being brushed up on like with your hands and stuff like that. But, you know, even like complimenting people. Yeah, I'll compliment someone. Oh, hey, you're dressed up today. You look nice. Or, hey, you dyed your hair, got a new haircut. Looks great. Like stuff like that is acceptable.
But that's not what that we're talking about here. I mean, this
is like the type of stuff that right. like they were defending.
No, exactly. And this is why there's been some really interesting writing this past week, especially around Al Franken. You know, like Kate Harding, for example, was writing in, you know, she's like, you know, Kate Harding is a feminist and writes on rape culture and things like this. I mean, just not someone who's kind of coming from the right or something like this, but she kind of wrote and kind of op-edited opinion piece in the Washington Post saying that this is probably Franken's resignation is not the best thing. Masha Gessen also came out saying that, you know, a part of a concern, she's writing in the New Yorker, about a concern that this kind of move of kind of allegations coming forward and then people immediately resigning before there's been kind of like a thorough vetting of what's actually gone on could result, and has in the past. She's citing Gail Rubin in this about bringing about more restrictive sexuality, right? And I think that those are all things, those are all discussions, and if you read those pieces, and we'll have links in the show notes too as well, they're important to consider. But I think, frankly, what's happening right now is a reckoning, right? I mean, what's happening right now is the fact that you've had, you know, I mean, decades and centuries, really, of this stuff being swept under the rug of the, you know, just like the lobbyists that you're talking about, right? They would make excuses for lawmakers, make excuses for men in positions of power, right? And have just consistently.
Telling a female journalist, all right, I'm done with you.
Right. Like, I mean, exactly. I mean,
that type of stuff.
Like, right. And this is what's going on. And so, you know, part of what when you have this kind of reckoning and this kind of adjustment, you know what? The lines get pretty sharp. If you did this thing, right, then you got to go. Right. And then what we're going to do now is that for once, right, for once, we're actually going to say we're going to believe women first, right, instead of kind of like immediately cast doubt on the kind of on what women are saying, right, immediately cast doubt on the allegations. We're going to believe them first and put pressure forward. Right. And this is everything to do with, you know, if you look at what happened through the, you know, the presidential campaign, through the misogyny that just was like so over and over the top during the presidential campaign and continues to be now, to the Women's March movement, right one after the other about this issue where women in kind of the halls of Congress, too, just have absolutely had enough. And this is what's got to happen.
And also,
you know, what bothers me, and I'll just give me a second. So one of the things that, you know, I've talked with some of my students about this, who were kind of asking me my opinion on this stuff this week. And I was saying basically the same thing. And this one woman in particular was concerned because she's like, yeah, but like you can't guarantee that every single one is going to be right. And then, you know, maybe we need to have a talk about this. And I was just like, look, I get that, right? But there's just
if there's
right
10
now
or 15 women coming out at once,
yes,
against someone willing to go on the record about something like this,
right?
More than likely, this is true.
No, it's not even that, right? It's kind of like let's just start from like, okay, yeah, if you have one, you know, maybe there's this kind of question, but when you see this kind of I mean, that the idea right now is that, look, we're just, like I said, just like I was just saying, we're just going to start by believing women, right? And that's what the reckoning looks like. And are there going to be marginal cases or a few specific cases that we could pull out that maybe this is kind of an overreach in terms of a response? Maybe, right? But those are going to be so few and far between. And I get the people that are concerned about protecting those instances. But overall, you're talking about again, this is Colleen Clemens. This is toxic masculinity. This is kind of a rape culture kind of stuff that has to stop. And so, you know, again, people who feel for Al Franken because of his work that he's done kind of in defense of women's rights and defense of rape victims and all this other kind of stuff, all that is good work. But nonetheless, right, it's part of that. It's part of that culture that is, you know, it's part of the kickback. So I don't really see there was any other option.
Yeah, yeah. I have to bite my tongue on this.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Stay tuned next week.
So the other thing too as well is, now if you look at the contrast there, and this is some of the stuff that the internal political stuff drives me insane, that, you know, like some people like Schumer are just seeing this as just a political way, a way of drawing contrast with the Republicans, where meanwhile I think a lot of the women senators and the women representatives are not seeing this as this is a political maneuvering thing. They're seeing this as no, this is what we're doing.
I know, you look at this past week, there was a Pennsylvania House. Or no, Pennsylvania Democratic consultant. She made some very controversial statements about this is a woman making very controversial statements, almost deriding women who participate in this Me Too campaign. And it took a petition started by freshman representative Leanne Kruger-Branke, mm-hmm. Branicki, out of Delaware County. Who's been taking the lead on a lot of these issues lately, basically starting a petition demanding that the Pennsylvania Democratic Party cut ties with this female consultant. And enough people and pressure was put forward this week where Pennsylvania Democratic, the head of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, Marcel Groen, had to walk backtrack on his statements made defending this consultant, and where they had a mutual splitting, where this consultant is no longer working with the Democratic Party.
Yeah, good. Good.
You know, it's women like Leanne Kruger Brannicki and Pennsylvania Judy Schwenk, Madeline Dean, who's now running for lieutenant governor against Mike Stack. You know, this is where the leadership on these issues are coming from. And, you know, had a really good conversation the other night. If you looked at who had the highest gains in the 2017 election across mm-hmm. the country, it was Democratic women with the elections. And if you looked at who had the second highest total gains, total gender and party, it was Republican women.
Yep.
And this Me Too campaign, you know, and stuff that's going to be coming down the pike within the next months, you know, up into the election, this will probably spur more women to run for office, especially in Pennsylvania, where we have some of the lowest representation of female legislators in the country. You know, this stuff exists, especially within the Capitol, because of the lack of representation of female candidates, and, you know, parties not willing to put female candidates up and run, recruit them to run.
Absolutely. And I think as long as when you're seeing, like, you know, if you look at the other side of the aisle, the national level, you look at, to say, Trent Franks, right, from Arizona, I guess he's the guy who resigned after it became clear that he had asked staffers, right, if they would bear his child as a surrogate.
Marino, who had to resign because he asked a woman to get an abortion.
Right, exactly. Yeah, Blake Farenthold, right, who basically was used taxpayer money to pay off $84,000, right, to basically pay off to settle this sexual harassment or an assault suit that was being brought against him. Now there's an ethics probe that's open up to that. They're going to be looking into that because he's still there. But, you know, the Republican Party, after first distancing themselves from, like, Roy Moore, right, and kind of down in Alabama, has reversed course, and now they're kind of all in, right, in support of him. Now the line that's coming out of the Republican Party is that, hey, let the voters of Alabama decide, you know, well, we can't do anything about it. We have nothing to say. And, of course, nobody is bringing that kind of pressure on Donald Trump. That should be there. So I think that makes it even that much more stark, right? As long as that behavior continues to be rewarded, I think we're going to see, you know, this is going to be a pattern that we're going to see for quite some time, and we need it.
Yeah.
So crazy, crazy. Well, listen, we're kind of run up on a break right now. One thing I want to mention before the break is that, you know, we saw all this tax legislation going on there, and, you know, got passed last Friday. We talked a little bit on the show last week what the implications will be. This week, there's protests across the country. There were sit-ins in Washington, D.C. last Friday from graduate students. There were all sorts of arrests. But the Republicans passed the tax bill anyways, and now it's got to go to committee. There's going to be some problems with that and all this other kinds of stuff. The message there is, you know, contact your legislators and push back against the tax bill. But one of the things that was interesting that came out this past week was the Koch brothers. They had a strategy memo that got leaked, right? And it was picked up again, reported on by The Intercept. And basically, here was the consultation. This is kind of what they said about dealing with a tax reform package, right? So here, and this is quoted from the memo, quote, "Avoid getting distracted on revenue neutrality. Economic growth increases revenues. Some Republican senators have expressed concern over supporting comprehensive tax reform that adds to short-term deficits. Though we fully appreciate those concerns, the long-term economic growth that would result from the first comprehensive tax reform in a generation would help to offset short-term deficits over time. That was the result of the Kennedy and Reagan tax reforms. There's no reason this time will be any different." Now, first, what's got to say is that that's patently false, right? Just in terms of that as a claim. But so what the advice basically here is that, one, you know, even though we told you to kind of, like, you know, run deficit, be concerned about deficits and use that as a way of forcing for austerity measures, now they're saying, no, pass this tax reform so that we get it, and then here's the language for which to sell it. And the language that it's in that memo is virtually the language that you see Republican legislators repeating, right, on every chance they get. So this is kind of like – this is clearly – and we also saw Republican legislators come out basically saying, we've got to pass this because that's what our donors want. I mean, they've been saying this almost like verbatim. So that kind of memo, and so I wanted to kind of touch upon that to kind of see that this, you know, this Koch network, this Koch funded strategy, and not just the Koch brothers, but the billionaire backed right wing ideologues that are kind of funding the right wing right now. They are super active, and they've been active in Pennsylvania. So I want to kind of set that up a little bit before we come back after the break.
And then before we go on break, just want to correct myself real quick. It's the congressional seat we're talking about is Luis Gutierrez in Illinois, who's stepping down at the end of the term. And then it's the DSA candidate is Carlos Ramirez Rosa is his full name. So it's going to be Ramirez Rosa against Chuy Garcia for that primary. And Bernie Sanders has already endorsed Chuy Garcia for the seat. So.
Awesome. There you have it. Well, make sure you stay tuned because after the break, because when we come back, we're going to be hearing a little tribute to Mad Cow Metcalf with a little Metcalf remix just called Beg. Don't touch. But for now, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
This day in labor history, the year was 1993. That was the day that President Bill Clinton signed the North American Free Trade Agreement into law. The stated aim of NAFTA was to increase trade between the United States, Mexico, and Canada. It created the largest free trade zone in the world up until that time. President Clinton declared that NAFTA would promote more growth, more equality, better preservation of the environment, and a greater possibility for world peace. Many NAFTA supporters thought that the agreement would create hundreds of thousands of new high-wage U.S. jobs. They also claimed the agreement would raise living standards in the U.S., Mexico, and in Canada. Yet many in the labor movement were deeply skeptical of these claims. Labor organized against the bill, but despite the protests, Congress voted to pass the free trade agreement. In 2014, the 20th anniversary of NAFTA, the AFL-CIO released a report detailing the harmful impact of the trade agreement. It noted some alarming facts, stating, while the overall volume of trade within North America due to NAFTA has increased and corporate profits have skyrocketed, wages have remained stagnant in all three countries. It also found that productivity has increased, but workers' share of these gains has decreased steadily, along with unionization rates. Current data clearly shows the damage caused by NAFTA. Nevertheless, President Obama and many in Congress have pushed for the passage of a similar trade agreement, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This agreement would simply expand the negative impacts of NAFTA. The TPP would lead to even lower wages and continued job loss. This agreement expands special protections for firms that send U.S. jobs out of the country. It is another in a long list of trade deals that have and will continue to hurt working people.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. You ready for some fun, Sean?
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
All right, here we go.
Stop touching me. Stop touching me.
Chairman, you're yelling at a lady. I wish you would.
President Bradford, I'm not yelling at anybody. I'm telling you, you're out of order. Please stop talking into the microphone now so we can receive our testimony.
I'm a heterosexual. I have a wife. I love my wife.
Stop touching me. Stop touching me.
Beg. Don't touch.
I'm a heterosexual. I have a wife. I'm a heterosexual. I'm a heterosexual.
Like, if you want to touch somebody, you have people on your side of the aisle that might like it. I don't.
Mr. Speaker, I will not be silenced.
Chairman, you're yelling at a lady. I wish you would.
President Bradford, I'm not yelling at anybody. I'm telling you, you're out of order. Please stop talking into the microphone now so we can receive our testimony.
The bully preys on someone who is weaker with the intent to commit an injustice. Mr. Speaker, I will not be silenced.
I'm a heterosexual. I have a wife. I'm a heterosexual. I'm a heterosexual.
The bully preys on someone who is weaker with the intent to commit an injustice. An injustice.
Bag, don't touch. I'm a heterosexual. I'm a heterosexual. Like, if you want to touch somebody, you have people on your side of the aisle that might like it. I don't. Bag, don't touch. I'm a heterosexual. I'm a heterosexual.
Mr. Speaker, I will not be silenced.
Stop touching me.
Stop touching me.
Stop touching.
Bag, don't touch.
There you have it. The one and only Daryl Metcalf. That's our Raging Chicken remix. Bag, don't touch. In honor of Daryl Metcalf. Sean, why don't you launch us into this one, man?
I mean,
stop touching me. So I guess it was Tuesday, sitting down on the Facebooks, and I see a feed from Brian Sims popping up, just going off on Daryl Metcalf and having him declaring his heterosexuality in the middle of a land use hearing, a state government committee hearing on land use. And I was like, what? And then the video came. The video came out. And then I called you a couple hours later. I asked you if you saw the video, and
I Well, it was pretty. I mean, it was really. I mean, having at the hearing, and so right at the time, you could see this representative. What, Bradford, right, is his name?
Yes.
So he's sitting next to Metcalf, right?
And he's the chair. He's the Democratic chair of the committee, Bradford.
Right. And so he's,
and then next to Bradford, you have his staffer. And then next to Metcalf, you have his staffer.
Yeah.
You know, and who are like the minority and majority staffers for the caucus committee, for not the caucus, for the state government committee.
Yeah. And you see this. So Bradford is trying to kind of talk about some amendment or something that's going on that they're discussing. And that Metcalf apparently was kind of like getting ready to kind of cut off the discussion. And so Bradford just kind of reached over for a second, you know, kind of like, oh wait a minute, second here, and kind of touches Metcalf on the arm. Like for a second.
Just for like a split second. It wasn't like he held his arm.
No. He just got like, no, I could hear, but just let me just say, and just kind of touch his arm as, you know, I mean, you see this happen all the time. It wasn't kind of, and then Metcalf just goes off the rails. And then you see people, the reactions of people at the table alone were golden. Like the one sitting like to Metcalf's right, that woman there, she's just like, her whole body's like, what the? He goes like, Bradford, I'm a heterosexual. And she's like, what?
You see like the one state senator or state representative, Miller out of Western PA, Republican. He just puts his like hands in his head, like both hands on his head, and just looks down at the table like, oh, my God. And then you have the other staffer next to Bradford. And she had like the breast. She was like staring at him. Like earlier in the video, you saw her like give him like the side eye.
Yeah.
And then you just saw her like hand go over her eyes like this, and she's like looking at the wall, like looking face down at the wall, and just like, oh my God. She's probably like laughing the whole entire time. You even see her like, you could even like lip read her, this state rep who I memed. If you see go on my Twitter account, you see I had this really great tweet. It's the state representative with her hand over her, or the staffer with her hand over her head, mm-hmm. and just like looking towards the wall. And she actually follows me on Twitter. the staffer, and she probably listens to the podcast. So hello, Ken.
Hope you enjoyed the music.
I'm sure she wasn't expecting to be on like national news,
right.
Like the Today Show, Washington Post, New York Times. Everyone picked this up, and her reaction was the best. She kind of just like, I put how we all feel when Daryl Metcalf go off the rails, and put not all heroes wear capes. It's just like a picture of her in Bradford, and then like a close up of her like looking down at the table, and you can actually see her go, oh my God, like towards the end of the video clip. But the best part was like when he goes, you know, some people might like being touched, you know, you hear Brian Sims go in the back, I like it. And Brian Sims is Pennsylvania's first elected openly gay member of the legislature. Yeah. So,
well, I have to say, one of the things was you also posted this this post with, you know, some of the old graphics that you had done with the white nationalist stuff.
Yeah,
right.
When, you know, let's just say, you know, we can make fun of Metcalf here. You know, it was like almost like he was being exercised.
Oh, you know, you could see it just like coming out of him. Something was coming out. You know, you don't know
just,
what.
It was just weird, man.
You know, he came out as a heterosexual, but there's a bunch of other things still left in that closet.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. Like his robes and his hood. But that was kind of the point of the white nationalist thing. But what was hilarious is that you posted that image up and stuff like under this, and there was a commentary, like as part of the comment section there, somebody had said, I take offense, Sean, and that you basically calling him a white nationalist, right? This is unfair to Daryl Metcalf. You have to call him a heterosexual white nationalist. Like, I first reading that comment, I'm like, oh, God, here we go. And then I just keeled over laughing. It was
and
hilarious.
That guy's really funny. I know him personally. He's a Pizza Boy customer. He comes in from Western PA all the time whenever he does business out here in Harrisburg. So, yeah. Shout out to Dan.
Yeah, shout out. Hey, Dan.
Thank you for correcting me on that.
Yeah, well, that wasn't the only insanity that Metcalf brought to bear. I mean, did you see the whole stuff of, you know, his whole
illegal immigration
alien stuff?
Type thing. Undocumented immigrants and stuff like that.
Not according to him. There were illegal aliens set to invade.
Illegal alien invasion. Yeah, so there's been a backstory, back history about this. So, in October, this video is actually from a month and a half ago. He said like illegal aliens 14 times in a 6-minute speech, supporting some of his bills. And after that, Chris Rabb took to the podium and basically questioned the use of the term illegal aliens as a derogatory term. And Mike Terzai, who's running for governor, is like, no, it's in the parlance of our times, which is like a fucking Big Lebowski quote, I guess. Like, no, this is actually the parlance of our times. So the term illegal alien is acceptable. Like, and if you look at like the older, if you look at the extended version of this video, it's on the PA House YouTube page, which is the House Democratic page.
Right.
Grab goes on to bring up a point saying, you know, there was a time where we used retard.
Right.
Within our legislature. There was legislation actually had those words in it. Those words are no longer socially acceptable within our society, as should this term be. And, you know, basically he making his argument, and Mike Terzai is like, nope, this is perfectly fine, acceptable use of this term, and it's okay to use this on the House floor.
There you go. Mike Terzai, you know, not only is he headed, he seems to be running for something or something, right?
Yeah, he's running for governor.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That guy.
Yeah, that guy. Running for governor. House
that
speaker.
Guy. You got him running for governor, right? That kind of guy, like, yeah, we should be able to use any term we want. I mean, the N-word, I don't even like to say the N-word because I think we should be able to say the word it's supposed to be. You know, this is Terzai there. And then you've got kind of Breitbart-backed Wagner running for governor, too, as well. I mean, this is what we've got teed up for 2018.
Yeah. And then you have Paul Mango, who came out last week in support of a full bathroom ban bill.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
So
I missed that.
Also,
somewhere.
Some of the things we missed this week because of Metcalf sucking all the air out of the room. The Pennsylvania House is moving forward with the 20-week abortion ban. They announced that they were going to vote for this in the House Health Committee last week. And one of the things the Pennsylvania House leadership has been doing, especially committee leaders, when they are bringing controversial bills up, they are waiting till the Friday before to put out their agenda to vote on these bills. So there's the transgender bill going after the health. Any state-funded money from CHIP or Medicare or Medicaid services going towards transition or transgender health services. Which was in the CHIP bill, CHIP reauthorization bill, but was completely stripped out before it went to the governor's desk. So as a response to that, the legislature decided to run that bill as its own standalone bill and not in the CHIP reauthorization. Mm-hmm. You have that. You have the abortion ban, two of them going through the same committee at once. So what the House has been doing, especially with these controversial bills, instead of saying this room, this time, we'll be voting on this. What they're doing is this room at the call of the chair. So basically what this means is it could be at 10 o'clock in the morning. Usually meetings are at 10 o'clock in the morning before a thing. But whenever it's call of the chair, it's when the House is in session. So the House has to gavel in. The house can be in there from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the evening. And any time during that hearing or while they're on the gavel on the floor, the chair can call a committee hearing. And the house goes on recess. So these are the tactics the Republicans have been using for the past year now, especially since the election, the past year to push through controversial bills so they could don't have the public showing up to these hearings and making a fit.
Right. So you can't schedule. I mean, that's basically what I was going to ask you, because that's what it seems like. Right. That's the strategy, is basically, to, you know.
Yes, we'll have this hearing today, but it's going to be at the call of the chair. So it could be at 1 o'clock, it could be at 4 o'clock, it could be at 3 o'clock.
Right. So you can wait.
But
say,
it's not going to be at 10 o'clock in the morning and give public ample amount of time to show up and to stage their disgust with this.
Right. So you could basically send your staffers out and look to see, like, when are the fewest number of journalists in the press room, right, or when are the kind of people out of there, and then call it at that point, basically, in order to make sure that nobody's there.
Yeah, pretty much.
Man, that's nuts. So this,
I know this is what Metcalf's committee has been doing. Metcalf's not as bad, but this is what, committees are – bills that Terzai wants pushed through, or the budget bills and stuff like that, especially with the budget stuff, mm-hmm. it's going to be at the call of the chair. And basically means anytime the chair wants to do it, we're going to go and do it. And it's one of the things that, like, people on the outside of Harrisburg don't normally notice that.
Yeah.
But if you're in the media, you're like, great, these controversial bills are running. I'm going to be here till like 7 or 8 o'clock at night because of this.
Right. This is like a state version of what we're seeing at the national level. I mean,
No, it's exactly what we're seeing at the national level.
Exactly.
We ran these bills through in the dead of night. And so when people are least paying attention, we're going to outwait the media and make sure, you know, if there's like, you know, when there's 10 or 15, 20 people in the media room, we'll wait until there's like 3 or 4.
Right. You know, and I can't underscore enough. Again, we've said this 1,000 times, but you know, Pennsylvania has remained relatively outside of the national spotlight when it comes to this stuff. But man, what is happening, the machinery that is kind of moving through Pennsylvania right now. If Wolf was not the governor, right? We had a Republican governor right now. It'd be a virtual mirror image of what we see at the national level. And the fact that you've got the serious money lining up, right? This dark money stuff that is lining up behind Wagner, Terzai, Mango, the fact that that is what is seeping in, and they were already seeing this stuff kind of being activated, is seriously a problem. We just saw this in the paycheck.
I was gonna say, before we get into that,
yeah go ahead, sorry,
the transgender bill going after the healthcare coverage for any transgender services, whether it's transition or other services they need, members of the transgender community need. So they ran this bill through committee, controversial hearing, controversially through there's no openness to it, right? They're not doing it in an open way, in a good faith way. This bill was actually voted out of committee on the second day. It was derailed partly because of Metcalf, but also because of internal Republican discussions within the caucus rooms, right? You know, after they take a little gavel in mm-hmm. for 15, 20 minutes, they'll go right to caucus and talk about how they will strategize for these bills. It was brought up by one of the caucus members within the caucus chamber that members' own families would continue to receive this coverage that would be offered for members of the transgender community. So this is part of their healthcare package.
Jeez.
And they're going after poor people who need CHIP.
Right.
And stuff like that. So I don't know if this is like a, hey, if we take away from one, we got to take away from all type of thing, mm-hmm. or we take away from them. But, you know, if my kids need it, my children need it, or someone in my family needs it, don't touch it.
Yeah, man, they're going for broke, man. I'm telling you, they're going for broke.
And this came out of nowhere. This wasn't something that was planned. This is something that came out of nowhere, and it was probably pushed by some family values group.
Well, yeah, but this is also one of the reasons why I think that 2018 is going to be such an important time. I think, there's enough people that, you know, again, the state is gerrymandered like so heavily right now that you've got a lot of protection for incumbent Republicans. But the tide of history is moving against them very quickly, right? So the fact that you're seeing such incredible pushback, both at the state level and the national level, but I feel like there's this ramping up right now of trying to get whatever they can get through now, right? And try to find ways of kind of like pushing stuff through, put together your
poison pills list. And bills or something like that.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what they're really trying to do. I mean, we're seeing right now, I mean, the other example we're starting to talk about, but I'm glad you brought that up as a segue in, because, you know, we saw, you know, the paycheck deception stuff come back too as well. Right. And then that was like, again, example number one of where we see the money pouring in.
Yes. So this past week, I don't believe it got passed through the House. The Commonwealth Foundation has been pushing hard for it. But so one of the things I noticed on social media, one of the things I was actually following a lot during the budget were these use of fake bots being used to lobby every single friggin' legislator that on Twitter within the Pennsylvania House and Senate to push through online gambling, right? Mm-hmm. As a way from Triad Strategies, as a way from, you know, I think Triad Strategies was the actual Triad Strategies might have been the actual firm representing the online gambling industry. But it was pretty much like a way of using this bot program, shooting off the same exact tweets out to these legislators, telling them to vote for online gaming. These bots would have like 2 followers and retreat like 5 days ago. Right. So I was, you know, I did a quick search for, Liberty TV, or I'm just watching, not Liberty TV. I'm looking at an advertisement. There's actually a Gavin McGinnis advertisement on the website right now. And I'm like, looking at. Thank you, Google, for that.
Yeah, right, exactly.
All right, so I'll regroup with this. So PA Spotlight shoots out a tweet basically of like a bunch of fake accounts shooting out the same message. You know, they were targeting Stan Saylor, who is the appropriations chair, Mike Terzai, David Reed, and a couple of other Republicans, basically saying, please support Paycheck Protection, SB 166 and HB 1174, PA Politics, PA House, hashtag AMP, Americans for Prosperity, hashtag AMPFW, right? Freedom Works. And then this bot would tweet out a link to the Commonwealth Foundation page supporting Paycheck Protection, right? Mm-hmm. So this social media fight starts after PA Spotlight calls us out for this, you know, some rumbling back and forth. Freedom Works, who is one of the people, there's collusion here going on between Freedom Works and the Koch brother networks on this, especially with the Commonwealth Foundation. Basically, like the Commonwealth Foundation, Matt Briette, Nate Benefield, and others are shooting out the same tweet. People from Freedom Works staff are shooting out the same tweet. Conservative activists, there's some conservative activists shooting out the same tweet. But there's also a ton of fake bots shooting out this tweet. You know, like for instance, they would have Pam Knox, at Pam Knox, right? Mm-hmm. 8221053. Like, would someone actually do that for their actual Twitter account?
That I thought that was my account when you were reading off. Sounds exactly like a real person.
So basically, they're using these like digital union busters, right? You know, these robots to go out to be union busters, digital strike breakers or whatever. It got to the point where a FreedomWorks staffer who was holding up a newspaper addressed to the FreedomWorks vice president at the FreedomWorks office in Washington, D.C., said, I think it's proof that I'm not a bot. We're waiting evidence on PA Spotlight isn't. So PA Spotlight's an organization, 501c4, and they want their people to make them. They want the list of employees made public, which the organization doesn't have the obligation to do so.
Right.
So
there you have it. I mean, I thought that was such a great. I mean,
like they were trying to say that PA Spotlight is the robot here.
Right. Right. Exactly.
A group shining light on people like an Escape Foundation, people in Freedom Works, Koch Brothers, and other the Fairness Center, the, you know, Matt Briette of the world and stuff like that.
No, it is great. I mean, you know, I thought that, you know, that image, right, that photo of him like holding up the Wall Street Journal with the address on him like that was so critical, right? So that you actually say, okay, here, this is absolutely clear. No, I'm not a bot. Look, I just work for this dark money group that we're doing all this stuff with. I mean, that was essentially what's going on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there you have
it. And then someone tried to like tweet at me, well, we're not associated with Koch brothers. I'm like, okay.
Give me a break.
My bad. The Scaife Foundation.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, that's right. It's Scaife. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Mercer. Oh, wait, it's both? Right? I mean, it's nuts. So
through the same tree.
Right. Exactly. And I want to, you know, this is a smaller case study, but I want to just kind of lay this out for folks so you can kind of see how this stuff works, because this touched real close to home this past week. When the tax bill was going through, I mean, there's obviously, you know, we've heard this enough by now, I'm sure, that there's going to be significant impacts for college students and graduate students in particular. College students will no longer be able to kind of deduct their student loan interest from their taxes. So that's a big thing for student loans. For graduate students are actually going to be taxed on the full taxed on their tuition waivers as if a tuition waiver were income. Right. So that basically, instead of paying taxes on $15,000 or $16,000 a year, they're going to be paying taxes on, you know, upwards of $65,000.
Essentially making graduate school something for the elites.
Right. And, you know, the science community especially is really, really concerned about this, because it's basically going to price a whole bunch of people out. Right. It's only going to be for people who can afford it. You know, and we'll see what's going to happen with this. But anyways,
you know, like the people like the Neil Tyson DeGrasses of the world who, you know, is from from Harlem, New York. You know, like, imagine the talent we're passing up on within the inner cities or within, like, working class families who want to have that goal of becoming a scientist, to not get that because college education is now completely unaffordable. You know, right. Getting a master's degree is completely unaffordable in the United States.
Right. Either that, or I mean, you think about what a huge giveaway this is for the banks and Wall Street, for example, because basically what that's going to do is that, so if somebody still wants to go on to graduate school, you know, what their options are going to be is to take out more loans. Right. So you're going to further kind of like indenture yet another generation. Right. Even further to this kind of like neoliberal capital, kind of approach to things. I mean, it's just awful. It's just awful. And they even already have kind of thing rolling out. I mean, you've seen this happen on the fringes of Republican politics, but it
has the potential of undermining higher education as a whole.
No, that's right. You're making higher education a direct tool, right, of the corporate U.S. I mean, that's really kind of what's at stake. I'll give you an example at Purdue.
You're making it hard for professors, people to become professors. You're not going to have a quality of higher education.
But absolutely. But see, there's a whole idea. So I'll give you an example. This is at Purdue University, for example. One of the proposals that they've been working on there is a sponsor a Boilermaker, right? That's their kind of, you know, the Purdue Boilermakers. They basically are trying to get kind of corporate sponsors of individual students, right? So that then students will basically, you'll have investors that will come in to invest in particular students to try to get a better return on their investment, right? Treating actual students as commodities that can be traded.
Would that student have to wear their jacket around campus?
Yeah. Well, sort exactly. Like a NASCAR driver. Maybe the tattoo on their forehead, maybe. Right. That, you know, that's a kind of like, seriously, that's you hear that and it sounds like it can't be true. But it is like almost like a return to indenture as commonplace. So anyways, the point being is that this was going on and we're sitting on campus. It's the end of the semester. Like, students are overworked at this point. They got exams, got papers, got all that stuff. Like, faculty, same thing, bringing all the stuff in. It's really, really busy. But this tax bill is coming up. But, you know, we're sitting there saying we got to do something. Right. So some members of our faculty. The union, ABSCUF, say, hey, listen, you know, we've heard from students there that are interested in doing something, at least to say, you know, to get information out to other students about what this tax bill is going to do to them. So we work with students. Our head of our student liaison committee for our membership committee and so on, kind of work with these students to put on a small rally. You know, it's going to be small because it's the end of the semester and that kind of stuff. But just as a way to kind of get the word out to say, look, we're doing something here. We've got to try to find a way to keep this going. We can't let this pass because time is running out. So that starts to get organized. Now, as one professor, Mauricia John, she's our faculty liaison committee chair. She's a freaking amazing, incredible scholar, incredible teacher, phenomenal, you know, just, I mean, all around. I mean, she's like top notch, professor at the university. So she does, as part of her classes, like, she'll have opportunities for students to go out kind of to check out different kinds of events and write something up about it for extra credit, right? It's kind of built into her class. She teaches sociology, anthropology, right? Focuses on questions of social movements and racial justice and gender and kind of like, you know, kind of colonization, a whole bunch of stuff like this, right? So this is all within her field. So she sends out something to basically students saying that this is another opportunity for extra credit to go to this tax rally and write something in response, right? So apparently a student who received that took that email and forwarded it to this organization called Campus Reform. Right now, Campus Reform, you may have come across them before. They are this kind of right wing kind of quote unquote journalist organization that their sole purpose, right, is to try to kind of like go after, you know, the liberal conspiracy in higher education, to basically go attack liberal professors and trying to kind of like fan the flames of this idea that there's like, you know, this kind of cultural Marxism that has taken over the universities. So you get this guy from Campus Reform, gets a hold of this email. And then kind of his name is Anthony Gokowski. He's the editor and quote unquote editor and investigative reporter from Campus Reform, and writes this article about this, and which basically claims that, look at this, professors, now it's in the plural, right, are giving students extra credit to show up into this anti-Republican rally. Right. Now, first of all, it was a complete distortion of what this was. This, right, you know, again, on the one hand, they say this is a partisan thing, blah, 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 blah. Like, number one, except my point, I spoke at this rally. I'm going to release part of that on the podcast as a separate file. But you call this a Republican tax bill, right? Just like every other newspaper does, in part because only the Republicans propose it and only Republicans voted for it. So factually, that's what it is. Right. But the whole purpose of the rally was educate what the implications are going to be for students. So this gets run. This gets run up. Right. And then as soon as it gets released on Campus Reform. Right. Then Dr. Mauricio John starts getting trolled. Right. Really hard. Starts getting emails, starts getting kind of, all sorts of hate messages and things like this in response to this. And this is their tactic. So that's the context, right, of kind of what took place. This ran in Campus Reform. But what happened from there, right, shows you the depth of this kind of dark money network and how they work, right, and how this functions. So once it gets published to Campus Reform, and I'm not going to be able to go through every single one of these things, there's just too many. But what happens then? Now it gets picked up by an organization called CNS News, right? Another right-wing organization, right, that kind of now reports on this report, even though it was a distortion to begin with, right, reports on that report. Then it gets picked up by Accuracy in Academia, right, another right-wing organization that kind of targets, quote-unquote, you know, leftist academics, right, and then appears on that. Then it shows up in Watchdog.org, then it shows up in Breitbart.com, and then Fox News then picks it up and runs a national story on this thing, right? There's no story there, but they're going to run it because it fits with their ideology. Now, here's the thing, right? So, one, you can say, okay, they're just people picking up on a story. But, look, if you look at Campus Reform, right, Campus Reform as an organization, right, their funding comes from the Koch brothers, right, and the Donors Capital Fund and Donors Trust, right, and the Charles Koch Foundation, right? Those are primary funders of them. And this is the same kind of stuff. They served Campus Reform. And, Sean, this kind of goes directly to things that you've been reporting on. Campus Reform also served as the sole evidence for Turning Point USA's recent McCarthyist professors' watch lists project, which publicly listed photos and details of specific college professors and administrators who discriminated against conservatives. Again, all constructed, right? So there's your first part. The second organization gets picked up by Accuracy in Academia. Well, who are these people, right? Well, guess where their funding comes from, right? Their funding comes from the John M. Olin Foundation, right, primarily. John M. Olin Foundation was something got founded, a dark money group that got founded basically in what, the 70s, right? And their sole goal is to target higher education, right, in order to enact of kind of a right-wing agenda, right, going after individual professors, by intimidating those professors there. So the John M. Olin Foundation and the F.M. Kirby Foundation, again, another big right-wing funder, right? That gets picked up from there. Then what happens? Okay, Watchdog.org. Who are these folks? Right, Watchdog.org are again, they're funded by the Franklin Center for Government and Public Integrity. Right, they publish. That's who publishes Watchdog.org. But who are these people? Guess who they get funded by? You got some Koch brother money in there. You got some Bradley Foundation people in there. Bradley Foundations are the ones that are funding the privatizations of public schools and the charterization of public schools. Right. So my point. And then you go to Breitbart, and of course Breitbart is kind of, you know, is the big tool of the right, funded by the Mercers and a whole bunch of other folks there too as well. So why do I say all this, right? In part to say that this is how this network works, right? Is that it gets into the bloodstream, right? And then spreads like a freaking virus, and that's exactly what it's designed to do. So when we're talking on like on this program, when we're kind of writing about this in our pages of Raging Chicken Press about the need to establish, right, a countervailing force to this kind of network of the assault upon, you know, just even truth for that matter, what is a basic fact, but particularly targeting people on the left, particularly targeting people, institutions that have been known for fair and balanced and accurate discussion and an open discussion and all this kind of stuff, is that all that kind of stuff is what we're seeing kind of get at work here. So this is something that we got to pay attention to. And this is something that just got worked out. Now, what happened, we're lucky in the case of the Kutztown University, what happened is that, you know, the university basically went and actually asked her what went on, right? She eventually pulled that offer of extra credit away. And that's then that got reported on again, and that became part of the issue. Why is that all important? They designed to go after that individual thing. They go after that, right, in order to target that individual faculty member, because basically it just deflected the entire discussion around the tax policy, right? The entire purpose of the rally, right, got completely overshadowed by this kind of this personality contact going after one particular faculty member. And again, this is how this stuff works. So you got to watch out for this, folks. This is what 2018 is going to look like the minute that we hit January 1st. It's nuts, man.
Yeah,
it's nuts. So, yeah. So happy stuff. You know, we'll keep it going. So we're going to follow up on this. I've put some feelers out to kind of follow up on this story to see where it goes from there. We'll check it out. One thing I want to mention before we go to break is that the PA Student Power Network, you know, again, we've been talking about them frequently on this show. They have been building for a free college campaign, right? And they've been establishing chapters across the state. On Thursday of this week, they had basically, you know, a pretty awesome turnout for a free college town hall down at the Community College of Philadelphia. They're putting together kind of a leadership training that's coming for the spring. And I think that we're going to see a whole lot about this push, that instead of just kind of trying to, you know, like hold the line on where things are in terms of public funding, to actually kind of push for an actual progressive agenda for free college tuition in the state. So we're going to look forward to that for the new year. All right, we're going to come up to the break, and we come back, we're going to get back to last call. And I know it's been a while. We're actually going to have some space news this week, right? And I got to credit Sean on that, so it's pretty cool. Oh, the last call, we'll talk about some beer news you know, whatever else is on our mind. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be back right after this message. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Over the past 6 years, we've brought unapologetic, progressive, activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. We've helped hold those in power accountable and shine a light on some amazing activist work. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive, independent media site. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting, investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new, sustainable models of journalism. And frankly, no one's going to do it for us. After the Trump election, we dug in even deeper. Thanks to some longtime members, one-time donations, and a shift in other resources, we brought on more writers and started paying them. Now we're doubling down and want to expand our infrastructure and pay our writers even more. We need to invest in our media if we have a chance to resist the unprecedented assault on democracy, working families, women's rights, and our planet. History will remember the choices we make today. So take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, the price of a local craft beer or a cup of coffee, you will be supporting homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member. Leave a one-time donation or learn about other ways that you can help. We don't have billionaire backers. Keeping progressive, activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support. Keep up the fight.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop
podcast. It's the last call. Oh, God, we're coming to the end of another day, and here we go, folks. We have the return of Space News, and this one is actually brought to you by Sean Kitchen, right? You know, the big skeptic about space and say this is not reality? Well, Sean Kitchen kind of put this one on the agenda today. So, Sean, why don't you take it away with Space News?
Voyager 2 or Voyager, fired its thrusters for the first time in like 37 years. Voyager is outside of our solar system right now, and they did it through the radio communications, and it took like 20 hours for for them to send the signal out, and it took another 20 hours for them to get the signal back and see that the thrusters were fired, which is pretty cool seeing that, like, you know, this is actually still a working piece of machinery.
Yeah, and it was successful, right? They were able to get the thrusters to fire, right? So not only did they get the communication, they actually got the thrusters to fire, and they're looking for ways of potentially using it to kind of reorient their Voyager's trajectory to explore different parts of it. I mean, I just think that's just, like, astonishing that this thing's still working.
Yeah.
But, you got me thinking about it because you put this on to Jen, and I was realizing, man, I haven't talked about Space News in a while. And I realized I hadn't really talked about it since basically I got my credentials pulled for the space conference, right? If you remember a while back, the plan was that last week I was going to be down in Houston at the kind of first ever the space commerce convention, which was going to bring together folks from NASA, from government officials, from the private sector, and some of these and academics. Basically, we're looking for kind of the future of space exploration and space industry, right? And given the fact that, you know, I've been talking about kind of this notion of galactic capitalism that seems to be right on the precipice of happening, I thought, what a better place to be to watch this happen, right? So I waited for a while. I was to say, okay, you know, I applied for credentials. I got an email back saying, you know, yes, thank you for applying. You have your credentials. You'll be able to check in, and gave me the whole procedures for it. I was getting emails letting know, say, okay, yes, you can sign up for this. And then as I was getting ready to book my hotel and my flight to go to Houston, I was looking at prices over the course of 2 days. I get this email from the conference saying that, I'm sorry, we only have a limited number of media credentials, and they're only going to trade publications. Right. So sorry, but you can come as an individual guest. Right. And you can pay for your own. I'm like, get out of here. Right. So I'm not, you know, I wrote them back and say, look, you know, this is increasingly where some of my own kind of academic work is. This is what I report on this stuff. This is what we're doing. And I was really hoping to do that, but I'm not going to come down and pay full thing to come on report on something, right, without a media credential. So I didn't go. So
to quote the Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Bummer, man.
Yeah. It's deep, man. That's deep. That's deep. Real deep, man. I'll tell you, but, you know, look, there's some stuff I've seen that's come up this week. There's a site called spacenews.com that I kind of frequently go into. And if you look at some of the stuff that's happening there, it's like, you know, as part of what happened, you had this whole discussion and panels about space manufacturing, basically looking for using the ISS, the International Space Station, as this kind of bridge to kind of this space manufacturing. So instead of having to manufacture things on Earth, ship it up to orbit, and then go from there, they're looking for establishing manufacturing stuff on the future. There's all sorts of discussions about revamping this space policy. Space modernization, right, is now – there's concerns about that because all this budget stuff is up in the air. I could just go in this for days, and I won't. But, you know, that's what I really hope to be there, because I think that, you know, and I'm just going to have to dig back in over once my semester is over to really kind of report on some of this stuff, because there's some really, I think, important discussions that need to be part of this, at least in my little mind. They're important, right? Which means, of course, that, you know, Sean will be well. Welcome to kind of check out for the last segment sometimes, because he'll get so bored. But I don't know. I mean, maybe I brought you on. I don't know. So, Sean, you got any kind of beer news out your way?
Sunny Side Up got released this week and then cans again, which is awesome.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yes, so indeed.
It's pretty much that's it.
That's pretty much that's it.
I was going to say I had my first paid shoot. this week.
Oh, do tell, man.
I was asked to, there's gerrymandering, a bunch of gerrymandering stuff going on in Pennsylvania right now, a couple of lawsuits. There's also the Fair Districts campaign, which is Fair Districts Pennsylvania, and they're pushing for legislative reforms within the gerrymandering process. As it stands right now, there's a possibility the maps, the congressional maps, are going to get thrown out for 2018 if a couple of these lawsuits go the right way, especially with the way the Democrats have picked up important seats in the Superior Court, the Commonwealth Court, and the State Supreme Court. There's that. So there's a really, really real, very real possibility our reform, our gerrymandering will get, our gerrymandered districts might get thrown out. By the end of the year, within the next few weeks, it could very well possibly happen for 2018, with the congressional districts, not the House or Senate. So I was shooting a bunch of B-roll footage at the Fair Districts table on Tuesday or Wednesday inside the Capitol. I'm just getting a bunch of like silent, like no communications like at all, but people just taking interest in the table and talking about it. So, and the guy's putting this documentary together. He's out of New York City, and his daughter is actually really involved with the Brooklyn DSA. So it's pretty cool.
That's awesome, man.
And so they're traveling through Pennsylvania consistently between here, Philadelphia, and Harrisburg, or Harrisburg and Philadelphia, to do this stuff, to get footage for all the gerrymandering issues that are going on. So, yeah, did that on Wednesday. That was pretty fun.
So the big message there is Sean Kitchen is for hire, folks. So you need some good photography, you need some good video, right? Sean Kitchen's your guy. You need some Oppo research, right, in your organization, Sean Kitchen is your guy. It's true, right? What can I say? Sorry.
No, that's pretty much it. What I got.
Cool.
Not too much beer news going on out here.
Yeah, so. We got a lot of stuff over this way too, as well. I'll just kind of blow through it, really. I mean, one, I was going to start with like Saucony Creek Brewery out in Kutztown. Today, they're actually releasing a new beer called the Land of the Misfit Toys. I'm happy that I'm going to be back on campus next week, so I can actually pick some of this stuff up. It is only on tap, but they've got the crawler machine going, and you can fill up growlers too as well. It is a it's a dark ale. It's aged in French oak red wine barrels and conditioned with a blend of wild yeast. Comes at an 8.5, right? So that should be really interesting. They're starting to do some more and more interesting things. Right here close to my home too, we got Free Will. Free Will just released Stay Tuned. It's a really nice Imperial Stout. They've been working on it. They've been doing more and more of this. You know, I remember when they had a stout. I just can't remember the name it was, like early on. And I wasn't that crazy about that early stout. But they're getting better and better with it. And so this one's actually interesting. And so that got released yesterday. That's an Imperial Stout that comes in at 10.1, right? It's available in 4-packs. So, I mean, check that one out. The cool event coming up too at Free Will is that they're having beer and breakfast with Santa, right, at Free Will on Sunday. I think it's from noon to 5 or something like this. You can check out the link in the show notes. From noon to 5, and Down to Earth Cafe, which is also here. Shout out to Ryman, who also runs the bakery here in town in Perkasie. They're going to be providing the food with some kind of beer-themed food for the day. Santa Claus will be there, right? If you want to bring your kids while you drink your beer, I guess. But it should be a good time. And I should, while I'm thinking about Saucony Creek too as well, to kind of jump back a little bit just to say that they've actually got a cool thing coming up on Friday, December 15th. I'll probably plug this again next week. But it's an ugly sweater party that will be starting on that Friday, December 15th at about 7 p.m. You can check out information there on their website too as well.
So. Oh yeah, I got one more thing. Beer thing. You might like this. So I have a gentleman's agreement with a friend of mine from out in California. He's a Los Angeles Rams fan, right? So this weekend the Eagles are playing the Rams out in LA, and we have a gentleman wager going on. You know, whoever teams wins, they get the beer from the other city. So
there you go. Just remember the one rule, Sean. Beg. Don't touch.
And there will be reciprocity on the other end. So, you know, either way, we're both going to win. It's going to be a win-win situation. I'll be sending some Pizza Boy stuff out there. Hopefully it's not a 6-pack or a 12-pack with our agreement. Hopefully it's just a couple cans and I get all the all the goodies from modern times.
There you have it. There you have it. Well, man, anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
No, that is it.
Well, I'm looking forward to I know you've already had this experience so far for the holiday season. I have not yet, but tomorrow just may be it. Maybe the first snow of the year kind of hitting us here in Southeast PA. So I'm really hoping that we get, at least a couple inches of snow so I can get to the holiday season, because I freaking love the holiday season. I'm not being sarcastic. I really do. Right. I ask my kids. I start Christmas music before Thanksgiving, so it's on my dad's son. What can I say? All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Remember, if you can, become a member of Raging Chicken Press at ragingchickenpress.org. Click on the support membership tab and be on your way. I'm sure that we're going to have tons to talk about next week, especially since you got the election down in Alabama coming up. We're going to look for new beers, and then potentially we'll have some kind of crazy discussions about PA politics. So for now, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Looking forward to a great weekend. Going to be stopping by and picking up my beer for the weekend at Free Will. Until then, see ya!
I mean, getting mad at the ruling class for controlling the media is like getting mad at a cat for being an asshole. Like, if you don't want an asshole cat, maybe don't have a cat.